Final case of the day is United States against Rodriguez.
Morning, Your Honors. Michael Nash.
Always wait for counsel to get seated. Mr. Nash.
Thank you, Judge. Judge, this involves a case in which the defendant was acquitted of the drug conspiracy charge, and the jury convicted him of the two phone counts, i.e., that he facilitated a narcotics transaction. During the course of the post-trial motions and the sentencing briefing, there was much to do about how much cocaine was involved. That revolved around some testimony that on March 7th...
Does anything turn on this appeal? Your client was indicted 7 years ago. It's hard to believe how long this has taken. And the sentence is 366 days. I assume it's been served long ago.
No, bond was granted pending appeal in the district court, so he is on bond.
He's not been in jail at all?
He's not been in jail at all. I think that he was in jail when first arrested for maybe a week, 2 weeks, something like that. Then the district court granted bond pending trial, and the district court granted bond pending appeal. So there is a great deal riding on it. On September 17th, surveillance agents watched the main defendant, Villasenor, get out of his car, go to the rear of his Villasenor's car, take a brown paper bag, go into Manuel Rodriguez's home. When he came out 10, 15 minutes later, he had no bag. That really is the only testimony other than the tapes and the search of the house that involves Manuel Rodriguez. On the 18th of March, the day after, there's a phone call, very brief, and Rodriguez says something to the effect, he saw it and he liked it. The government claims the it is cocaine. There is no evidence, none whatsoever in this record, what was in the bag. The government concedes that. In the course of the decisions by the district court, the government or the trial judge said that it was reduced to guesswork, that it was a shot in the dark to determine how much cocaine was in the bag. In reality, it was a shot in the dark and speculation that it was cocaine in the bag, because nobody knows what was in the bag. There was no testimony, and other than the phone call using the pronoun it, nobody knows what was there. Government, in its response to the post-trial motions, he said, amidst a flurry of drug activity, the defendant was visited by Villasenor with a brown bag, and therefore it contained cocaine. Later, in the PSR, in the government's version, it said that he had facilitated 4 kilograms. The probation officer in the pre-sentence investigation said it was more likely that it was 1/2 gram or 1/2 kilogram to a kilogram. The court, when it ruled, said there was a small amount of cocaine, and again, I'm reduced to guesswork and a shot in the dark to determine what was in the bag. Everything depends upon the bag. Both the government and the trial court said that both calls revolved around Rod Villasenor thinking that he could get cocaine from Rodriguez. That doesn't square with the government maintaining that the brown paper bag that Villasenor is delivering to Rodriguez contains cocaine. In fact, in the government's brief on page 22, they say that from March 12th through the 21st of March, Villasenor is trying to find a source for 3 or 4 kilograms of cocaine for Jones. Well, if he's looking for a source of cocaine for Jones, he isn't delivering cocaine to Rodriguez. That's inconsistent. So with that, if there are no questions, I'd like to reserve...
I'm lost. Why is it inconsistent to say for somebody a commercial dealer to say, I'm sorry, I can't give the car to you because I've already given it to somebody else, so I need to get a new car for you.
I don't quite understand.
You seem to be saying that if there was no cocaine available for Smith, there can't have been cocaine available for Jones.
It's possible there could be.
Of course there could be. Sure. It's perfectly straightforward.
But the government...
So why is it inconsistent?
Because the government maintains that Villaseñor is attempting from several sources, including Rodriguez, to find this cocaine for Jones, and he can't find it. And only at the last minute does he get it from somebody else. If that's the case, it seems unlikely, that's all I say, unlikely that he's delivering cocaine to Rodriguez. And the unlikely becomes not likely when we don't know what's in the bag. Could have been a pastrami sandwich. Could have been anything. Why do they get the benefit of the doubt that it's cocaine? There's no evidence in this record. I hope that answers your question, Judge.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Mr. Nash.
Thank you.
Mr. Getter.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the Court, good morning. Matthew Getter on behalf of the United States. Your Honor, I would like to focus rather, instead of on what the jury didn't know, what the jury did know. The jury had before it a copious amount of evidence that Mijin Villaseñor...
Mr. Getter, before we get there, I'm a little puzzled about the posture of this case. The briefs give at least three different dates for the judgment of the district court. And so far as I can figure out, the judgment was amended once after being entered on August 12 and perhaps twice. Right. Mr. Nash's brief says the judgment was entered on August 12th, the appeal was filed on August 13, and the judgment was amended on August 31. And it then, the appendix to his brief then includes a copy of a judgment that's dated September 1, all of which is very peculiar. It looks like the district court amended the judgment sometime in September, more than 3 weeks after the notice of appeal had been filed, and at a time when the district court therefore didn't have any jurisdiction, and, of course, after the time allowed by Criminal Rule 35C. Could you help us figure out what is going on?
Judge, I hate to plead ignorance, but...
Don't you have to?
I wish this were the only time. My understanding, and I was not present when this happened, is that there were additional terms of or conditions of supervised release that the district court wished to place on the defendant.
Yeah, well, that's fine. Rule 35C says a district judge has 7 days to do that. And from August 12 to whether it's September 1 or September 31 is greater than 7. So that was an illegal amendment to the judgment, and it was illegal for two reasons. One, after the time provided by Rule 35C, and two, it's while an appeal was pending, and there's only one court that has jurisdiction over a case at a time.
That is the law, Your Honor.
So why didn't you tell the district judge that this was illegal and avoid this problem? We're going to have to send this back with instructions to undo this because it was an illegal change, right? This could have been avoided. The lawyers for the two sides could have noticed it, too.
Yes, and I just did not pick up on that, Your Honor.
All right, well, proceed.
The jury had a large amount of evidence before about the scope and the breadth of Mijin Villaseñor's drug conspiracy, which included large multiple kilo cocaine transactions from Texas to Michigan. The evidence came in the form of T3 wire intercepts, drug seizures, cooperating testimony, as well as surveillance testimony, as well as searches that were conducted in various locations. Focusing on Rodriguez's role here, the jury had before it intercepted conversations between Mijin Villaseñor and Manuel Rodriguez, which showed the nature of Rodriguez's facilitation of the cocaine conspiracy. In the calls on March 17th and March 18th, it was clear that Rodriguez was helping Mahin distribute a certain quantity of drugs. Yes, the quantity is unknown, but it was certainly a quantity of drugs. That was clear. Rodriguez asked Mahin to come to his house, and the agents surveilled Mahin dropping off a package and leaving the residence without a package. And then the next day, Rodriguez and Mahin had a telephone conversation in which Rodriguez said the guy saw it and said it was fine. So clearly Rodriguez was brokering some sort of a deal between Mahin and some unknown individual. And Rodriguez also told Mahin that he said the other guy thought it was like the other one, which indicates that there was a previous history of transactions between Rodriguez, this unknown person, and Mahin Villaseñor. Rodriguez also said to Mahin to bring the money, if he was okay, if he paid him the money in the afternoon because he didn't have any on him right then. Combined with the fact that agents recovered what was, the expert testimony showed was drug ledgers showing quantities and prices, this showed that there was sufficient evidence for the jury to conclude that that Rodriguez was using a telephone in this call to facilitate the drug conspiracy. As far as the March 20th call, in this case, the evidence was sufficient for the jury to have concluded that Rodriguez was helping Mahin obtain multiple kilograms of cocaine. The context, the overlay for this call, was tapes played for the jury showing that Mahin was scrambling, trying to get 3 or 4 kilos of cocaine from some of his various suppliers. And in fact, several minutes, about 4 minutes after Mahin got off the phone with Dominguez trying to get cocaine, he had the charged conversation with Rodriguez. Mahin asks Rodriguez if he could see the photo for those guys. So it was clear to Rodriguez from that call that Mahin was trying to obtain cocaine for somebody else or some other people. It was coded language in the use of photos, and then later on in that conversation, use of the term tires. Mahin asked Rodriguez if he could get at least about 4 tires, which again is coded language that was sufficient for the jury to have concluded that it was cocaine he was trying to obtain, particularly when they heard evidence that Stevie Jones was trying to obtain at around that same time 3 or 4 kilograms of cocaine from Mahin Villaseñor. Again, combined with the drug ledgers found in Rodriguez's apartment, residence that was sufficient for the jury to have concluded that this telephone call was for the purpose of facilitating the drug deal. The record is far from devoid of evidence from which a reasonable jury could have concluded that these telephone calls were meant to facilitate the drug conspiracy. Absent any further questions, the government asks this court to affirm the conviction. Thank you.
Thank you. Anything further, Mr. Nash?
Very briefly. In answer to your question, Mr. Gettert, I would say that I did notice that, and I've seen it in other cases, and I've always been concerned whether it's necessary to file a second notice of appeal. I subsequently have determined that it's not.
Rule 4 says it's necessary to file an amended notice of appeal only if you object to the amendment to the judgment. But the fact remains that the district court had there were two reasons why the district court had no authority to amend this judgment, and it would have been helpful to us had either you or counsel for the United States pointed out the fact that we need to do something here.
I apologize. Judge, what the government is arguing to you is that there is a lot of conversation about drugs, most of it with Villaseñor and others. The two conversations in question that you have to decide whether they relate to some specific drug transaction. The government tried to pass off the fact that it related to the Stevie Jones transaction, and the district court said there's absolutely no evidence of that, and in fact, the drugs were gotten from another source. So in reality, if the government's correct, anybody that calls up somebody else, A calls B, to try and get drugs from them, and they don't, that facilitates a drug transaction merely because A thought maybe B might have drugs. Nothing came of these conversations. They don't have a drug transaction. The difference in Townsend by this decision by this court is the court examined the facts to see if there was a drug transaction, concluded that there was not. In McGee, the witness testified that, in fact, the conversation related to a drug transaction, that he participated in it. That's the same as Briscoe, which the government cites, and Ray also. Ray was constructive possession. There just isn't a drug transaction. And everything begins with the government's assumption that the bag contained drugs. We don't know what was in the bag. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much, Mr. Nash, and we appreciate your willingness to take the appointment in this case. The case is taken under advisement, and the court will be in recess until tomorrow.